Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent Breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 515, Joker Notha.
Yeah, just Joker.
That's how you know it's arty.
Yeah.
They didn't call it the Joker.
No, it's, you know, yeah. You got those cool opening credits and all that good stuff, so.
So before we dig in, let's go around the table. Everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Store, Spreaker, because Kevin likes it when I say Spreaker. While you're there, subscribe so you never miss an episode. And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, you could leave a review, and then you can hop over, join our group. This is a lot of stuff. I hope you're writing it down.
Gotta be.
You can join our group called the League of Show Sharers. You can also share an episode and be an honest-to-goodness League of Show Sharer. And then our Patreon account, patreon.com/realspoilers. $5, you get bonus content and you get to help out.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll make you feel all warm and tingly inside.
Indeed.
But not in the dirty spots.
No.
I mean, unless you're into
your
that.
Heart.
I mean, I don't know what your fetishes are.
Yeah, I don't judge.
But
I mean, if giving us money is that for you, please.
But yeah, I mean,
you do it as often as you want.
If it makes you tingly in your dirty spots, I'm just thinking 10 or 15 bucks. Well, how tingly will you feel then?
Spider sense tingly.
You'll feel very tingly indeed. So there is all that. I guess let's dig in to Joker.
Whoa.
That's a movie that not a lot of buzz about. I mean, no one's really talked about this
movie.
They
kept it pretty much on the DL. They didn't want to, you know.
Didn't even know this was coming out this weekend.
No, I had no idea.
Took me by surprise.
Yeah. So I'm just going to say this right off the bat. I'm going to make references to The Killing Joke, which was a one-shot story by Alan Moore and Brian Boland. That actually wasn't supposed to be in continuity, but got brought into the continuity. I'm also going to talk about a book called The Batman, The Man Who Laughs, which is the post Zero Hour, which was like when DC first rebooted their continuity. It's his
origin.
Well,
it wasn't when they first
rebooted. Well, the second time. I'm going to talk about both those books. That book is by Ed Brubaker and Doug Monkey. Go find both of those. If you've not read them and you were trying to get into Batman stuff, those are two of the probably the best Joker centered stories that have ever been written.
And you know, the connection, but the whole full circle thing with The Man Who Laughs.
Yeah. It was a movie, but it was the guy from that is based on like Robinson's original look.
Yeah. When Jerry Robinson created the Joker, he modeled it on Conrad Voigt and The Man Who Laughs. So to have a book about the Joker called The Man Who Laughs brings it full circle, and it's really neat. I mean, that was a huge inspiration. If you go back and look at that film from the 1920s and you see the guy with the makeup and the really creepy look, it's like, geez, that was Joker back then.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You can see it.
Yeah. And let's not, Bob Kane didn't create anything. Let's put that right on Front Street. Jerry Robinson was the man and created almost everything you love about Batman.
Oh my gosh, I have a great book. If you can find it, I don't know if they're still selling it new, but certainly you can find it online somewhere, eBay. But there's a big hardcover book on Jerry Robinson, and it goes through everything that he created, and it's amazing.
It's
I love it. I mean, when you go through, I mean, and some of it was created with Bill Finger, who obviously was very influential as well and has been getting more credit over the years.
And he's another one who created everything.
But
Bob Kane didn't create anything.
Yeah.
Came up with the name.
Yeah, But yeah, the stuff that you know and love, Bill Finger, Jerry Robinson. But if you can find this book, I wish I knew the exact title, but it's a big hardcover, like a coffee table size book, and it just goes through artwork and all the years and comics where stuff that he created first appeared. And
right.
It's fascinating to see his influence on the Batman.
Absolutely. So yeah, there's a lot of reference. I know that Todd Phillips has said that they didn't. This is an original story, and it for the most part is, but a lot of it is taken from The Killing Joke.
I wouldn't say a lot. I mean, there's one.
I think there's one big.
There's
thing.
One through line. So there's never been a definitive Joker origin story,
which is the way it should be.
But I think that's also why this movie is a standalone film. If we're gonna do an origin story for a villain, this is the one, because we don't have a definitive story.
So here's my thing, though. Since he is this character, the Joker character in this movie, is an unreliable narrator, is this
right.
the origin?
I think that's the best part.
You don't you're listening to him and you're just like, okay, you're going along with it. But throughout the entire, when you realize what's happening, you're like, maybe this is just not real.
Yeah. By the time we get to the end, and we'll talk about the things, what we think are real or not. But I think that's one of the best parts of this, is we've never had a definitive Joker origin story. And I think this is a great one, but also you question, is this even the definitive
Joker?
It's the
Heath Ledger effect, where he's telling different origins about why he looks the way he does and things like that. And there's a lot of nods. There's a scene where he slides down a pole. So there's a lot of nods to former Batman stuff and other.
Slides down a pole.
Yeah, he like jumps on like a pole and slides down.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
And I was like,
that.
Well, all right, I get it. Yeah.
Did he lift a Shakespeare head?
He did not. No, he did not. Okay. So this movie opens with Joaquin Phoenix as Arthur Fleck, who is, we don't really know what his story is from the jump. Just that he is
a loser,
very much a loser. He's working for. Like a clown for hire company, and he's working for like an appliance store or like an electronics store.
Yeah, he's like a sign twirler.
Right, looking like a clown.
This company rents out clowns for promotional things, whether it's parties, events, stores that are advertising. They outsource this company to send clowns to different things.
Correct. And he's just, you know, he's just twirling the sign, and two kids, like a group of kids kind of jump him and take the sign, and he has to run after him and gets jumped by these kids. And then, you know, it's interesting. This is a beautifully shot movie. Like, this is next level. I was shocked.
This movie is gorgeous, and that's one of the things that really sold me on it.
What's funny, it's gorgeous in how ungorgeous it is.
I
was trying to find the words to describe it, because you're absolutely right. It's a dirty, disgusting, you know, filthy movie.
Right.
But it's beautifully shot, and so it is, like, brutally gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to, like, it's tough, because this is the first time that Gotham has not looked like Gotham. Like, this looks like New York City rather than any previous, like the Nolan stuff was shot in Chicago. So it looks like, you know, that looks like what Gotham should look like. But this one looks like New York in the 70s, which, I mean.
And this is where I think that we should jump in here with the parallels that it draws to Scorsese's work.
Sure.
So as most people know, Martin Scorsese was a producer on this project in the beginning.
Right.
Randomly, just all of a sudden, his name was pulled from it. We don't know why. There's never been an actual explanation. I'm thinking maybe after this movie comes out, makes its money. I mean, eventually, hopefully it will come out. Why? I'm just curious. But this movie read so Scorsese all over it. And so when we're talking about 1970s New York, this takes
place. According to Wikipedia, it's 1981.
Yeah, this takes place early 80s.
Well, I was trying to figure, when did Blowout come out?
I think it was like 80, 81.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's that's on a marquee. Is like when certain characters are coming out of a theater.
Yeah.
Okay. Then that makes sense.
Yeah.
But this movie is so, when we talk about these movies of Scorsese's, obviously a lot of them revolve in New York, but there's two films in particular that this movie draws a lot of inspiration from. One is Taxi Driver.
Yep.
And one is King of Comedy.
Absolutely.
And so those two, if you combined Taxi Driver and King of Comedy and applied Joker to it, I feel like that's a perfect description for this movie.
I think
movie.
You're right.
When we talk about the character of Arthur Fleck, I mean, look at Rupert Pupkin and
Travis Bickle.
You've got this loner who appears unstable. He lives with his mother. He imagines an audience laughing at his bad jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, the parallels there are.
There's a lot
so
going
clear.
On. Yeah, and then what's kind of brilliant
even
about this.
Even role plays being on the show.
Yeah, there's no way that you can't say that he drew influence, especially with Scorsese as a producer early on in this movie. It's unquestionable. that it takes influence from that. So we see that character a lot, and the Killing Joke,
yeah,
that's the origin of the Joker.
One bad day.
Yeah, we see that he's an aspiring stand-up comedian, he's not good at it, and he breaks.
Yeah.
And so,
well, no, I think, doesn't he, he's trying to make money, and he joins up with the Red Hood,
yeah,
and then he gets knocked into the Vatican,
sure,
becomes a Joker. Yeah.
But it's like he seems like he's a good guy, and he's trying to pursue this dream, and bad stuff happens to him. And so that's his origin in that book of the Joker. When you look at King of Comedy, you've got the Rupert Pupkin character, who's very similar to Arthur Fleck. He's not good. He thinks he's great. He has these illusions and dreams that blur fantasy and reality.
Yeah.
It's great because this movie does something very similar, where you have to decide and you have to figure out what's real or not, because the movie just films them like it's
life.
The next scene.
Yeah.
But in that,
that's life.
Yeah. And Scorsese's picture, what was it, 82 or 83?
What's that?
The King of Comedy. That was early 80s, I want to say,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Because I know it was.
It's interesting that he doubled down on that again. With,
don't ruin it for people, yeah, if they haven't seen it. But yeah.
But there's,
yeah,
a question,
it's
the same, there.
It's a, yeah, question, yeah.
King of Comedy was 82.
82, okay. Look at the timeline of this movie and King of Comedy.
Yeah.
I think this movie's more King of Comedy, but there's definitely the Taxi Driver influence. But
King of Comedy didn't have the violence. Mm.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that it's like, right, you could still end up rooting for what, Rupert Pumpkin?
Pumpkin.
There's no M.
Pumpkin.
Yeah.
You could still end up rooting for him because ultimately he didn't hurt people.
Yeah.
I mean, he did take people hostage. I'm not saying he wasn't it could have easily went wrong,
yes,
and ended in violence.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of the...
There's and also, just to go back to that argument about the John Wick violence compared to this, and I feel like when you have a movie like John Wick that doesn't, I mean, it does glorify the violence, but that's also, there's a sheen of action movie violence,
yeah,
compared to,
and there's also a structure of that movie where he's not hurting anyone innocent,
right
there, right, are no innocent bystanders,
so when
the
we,
way
right, and in this one it's like it's not like he's not reloading on the fly. Like he's, it's one gun, one shot, and then there's other like factors that weigh into it. So to go back on what I said, I was like, I don't really understand. I understood what Todd Phillips was saying. Now I'm on the flip side of that. After seeing Joker, I understand the fear and what this movie could
entice.
There's a big difference. There's a
big difference
between like action movie violence and this kind
real
of violence,
world,
real
right,
world violence.
So the other parallels, so we've already talked about Rupert Pupkin is this comedian who's not good, but he's obsessive. He thinks he has talent when he doesn't, and he imagines things around him, like people laughing at his jokes and audiences cheering and him becoming a celebrity. Rupert Pupkin does the same things in King of Comedy and set in the same time period. Now, Taxi Driver, where that comes in, certain points in Joker, he's keeping a journal,
yeah,
and he's reading it in therapy sessions. The social worker tells him to keep this journal, and Travis Bickle keeps a journal in Taxi Driver and narrates it through his journal. And he talks about the streets of New York being filthy and,
yeah,
trash, and someone needs to clean this place up. And Arthur Fleck has a very similar thing about Gotham,
yeah,
and the streets. And,
and this is Gotham. This is pre-Batman, and it's about to become the Gotham that we've always seen, like where it's not safe to walk at night. Like it's on the verge of becoming that version of Gotham. Like,
yeah,
we're right there.
This
is honestly an origin story for Gotham, like in the Gotham that we know and everybody involved in Gotham. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost like
all the pieces in place.
I'd be interested to see if they bring this in. And there's a way they can do it, and I'll get into that at the end.
I hope they don't. I honestly would like to see more movies set in this world. I hope
like
they don't bring it in,
universe,
but just let it be its own thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And let's not see 20 of them.
Sure.
Let's see one every 2 or 3 years.
You mean like an alternate universe Gotham?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they've already got it.
Yeah.
They got a TV one. They got,
right,
a movie one.
Why? They've got
another
TV one.
Your thing's already so splintered. You stumbled into something I thought was pretty good. When I first got done watching the movie, I wasn't sure what I thought of it. And the more distance I get from it, the more I like it.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and I like, It's funny. I was talking to Dan about it a little bit, and he was like, "Oh, great, another Batman origin story." And I'm just like, "I get that, but I like how they kind of came at it sideways."
Yeah, and it's a back end origin story.
Yeah,
back end exactly.
Yeah, and I liked that take. And ultimately, I look at this like an Elseworlds story.
That's kind of where I was at.
And in that, I liked, you know, I like when they take the pieces and they put them in a different environment. And they see, like, well, how does it work here?
Let's send them to Russia.
See what Gotham by Gaslight or Red Sun or, like, let's see how it works in these worlds. And, you know, I like that. I also am like, I'll be interested. I know they made a lot of money. I'll be interested to see what people actually kind of think about it.
Yeah.
Because I also kind of walked away going, like, who is this for? Like, oh, do you like 70s art house movies and Batman? Let's make one of those.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know if the average person is going to walk out of this movie happy with
it. It's got super high scores from audiences.
Yes. Okay, that's great.
Which is great because I was worried. Now, the critics, so if you look at Rotten Tomatoes, it's now at 69%. So it was hovering around certified fresh is 70 or higher.
Man, really?
It still has the certified fresh rating, even though it's dipped to 69. So it might be right on the border there. But audience are in the 90s. Cinema Score gave it a B+, which I think for this movie is really high because this is one of those love it or hate it movies.
It's a divisive movie, and, I'm sure, for people. Yeah,
to have a B+, I think is really surprising that people, you know, you'd think it would average to a C. You hated it or you loved it.
Sure. Yeah.
So audiences are really digging this movie, which I think is good because it's a heavy movie. It's not your typical.
It is a heavy movie.
And I think the negative critical reactions I've seen for the most part seem to be people that are like, this is a fake artsy movie.
I don't agree with that.
I'm just saying.
No. Yeah.
They're like, you took a superhero movie and made it almost as a parody of an art house movie. And I, you know, it's funny. We talk about how Marvel stuff and how DC, you know, hasn't really captured that.
Right.
And I think ultimately they should thank Marvel for it because I do think that they've aped the Marvel model for
movies. In what way?
This is like bringing in Scorsese to do a DC movie.
Right. The way that you can look at a Marvel movie and go, oh, we're going to set, what if John Hughes made a Spider-Man movie?
Got it.
You know, let's make a faux Shakespearean drama with Thor, right? Like,
and do the Rocketeer with Captain America.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, or let's do a spy movie. Let's do 3 Days of Condor, but with Captain America. Yeah.
That's
right?
Really what they did here. I mean,
that's a great point.
Wonder Woman is just a Wonder Woman movie. It's a really good movie.
Sure.
I don't feel like they did.
They really didn't.
There's a little bit of fish out of water, but that's nothing crazy. But I felt like,
no, that was Aquaman.
But
he was in the water in there. Yeah. A lot of it was filmed underwater, actually.
But like, really, I think after Wonder Woman, the best DC movie, in my opinion, has been Shazam.
I agree.
And they followed the Marvel model, right? They were like, okay, let's do Shazam.
Let's do big, but
make it a body swap comedy. Yeah. And I feel like that's what they did here. Let's make the Joker, but let's make it a 70s era art house movie.
And if you've seen those two movies, and that's why I've been telling everybody, if you have not seen Taxi Driver and King of Comedy, see them first so you understand what they're doing here.
Right.
Because if you just see this movie, I mean, it's not going to say you won't like it, but it would be interesting to see this movie and be like, oh, I really love what they did here. I've never seen anything like this. But if you've seen those two,
right,
you'll understand the influences that it's taking, applying that Scorsese 70s, early 80s feel to a comic book movie, because they've done this exploration before, not with a super villain, but they've done this human exploration before.
And I think that's some of the reason, I think that's where some of that negative critical reaction comes into, is that took movies that, you know, critics love, although they didn't love King of Comedy when it came out.
Of course they didn't.
But they were just like, but this isn't Scorsese. And it's funny, I saw it when I was a kid. I was probably 13, 14 years old, knew nothing about Martin Scorsese or high art film. I just saw it on cable and was like, this movie's great.
Oh, it's so good.
Like, I just enjoyed it as a kid watching the movie.
I need to revisit it.
But it's Taxi Driver and King Comedy are my top two. Like, I love it.
Really? It was like years later when I was like, wait, when I finally knew who Martin Scorsese was, and I was like, that was him?
Yeah.
Like, I had no clue. I just was like,
interesting.
But
I think that's the same as how critics initially came out not as hot on Jackie Brown, because it was like, well, this isn't Tarantino.
Right.
It's a great movie, but they're like, oh, I'm expecting Pulp Fiction Tarantino.
Right. Yeah, totally.
And he kind of put himself behind the eight ball doing something that was completely different than
I mean, it's a similar situation to what M. Night Shyamalan ran into after Sixth Sense, except
he doubled down
on it.
He leaned into it. He just kept trying to recreate it and failing. It wasn't until he finally stopped that he kind of had a resurgence. But I think some of the negative critical reaction is because of the fact that it's so similar to those two movies that they love. They almost feel like that it's sullying those movies, or that it's stealing from them. And I think the average film goer probably hasn't seen Taxi Driver. I feel very confident they probably haven't seen King of Comedy. Yeah. And so to them, this is very new and fresh.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not to take away anything from this one, because I did like this movie, but I like people to understand that Scorsese made some of these observations with those two movies, a lot of the observations. And it's like when you listen to a song that like a modern song that a pop star samples, and you're like, oh, this is amazing.
Right.
They're geniuses. And it's like, that's a sample of 1970, whatever.
It's
like the kids don't understand that they didn't invent that. They're sampling.
Totally.
It.
I mean, how many times have we had this conversation where you guys love something? I'm like, but that's this thing. The one time, Kevin, it wasn't on the show, but we were talking, you were talking about It's Gary Shandling show and how you're like, oh, the way that he would like stop and talk to the crowd, and you'd see the audience, and it's like it's a sitcom, but he would completely deconstruct it, and nobody'd ever done anything like that. And I'm like, here's George Burns doing it in 1950 on the Burns and Allen show.
Right.
I mean, it was identical to what you were loving about the Gary Shandling show. And
it's the Vanilla Ice didn't create Under Pressure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I just think it's important to understand, but it doesn't take away from this one, I don't think, because they change enough. There's a lot of differences. Sure, there are influences, but what Joaquin Phoenix is doing here is at some point similar to De Niro, but in other ways so vastly different.
I agree.
And Joaquin Phoenix, I think, is the greatest actor working today. I think he's a genius. You know, I think he's Daniel Day-Lewis level, but he's, of course, retired. But, I mean, I think he is on that level.
Good.
The man is just amazing. And Joaquin Phoenix, I always say he has such a distinctive look. But yes, he disappears into his roles.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He takes them over. He's a method actor.
His body language changes,
and
the way he carries himself.
Exactly. And so it's amazing to see him do this work here. And
the film is similar to Taxi Driver, but the performance is not.
Yeah.
And
that's a good point.
Because Travis Bickle was a wannabe tough guy.
Right. And he's not.
And Arthur Fleck.
Well, he's not.
He doesn't want to be tough. He just wants to be not picked on.
When that switch flips,
right,
then it becomes a different.
He's a veteran. He's a PTSD.
Yeah.
Is it Vietnam?
I think it would have been Vietnam.
Had to have been. So he's a PTSD Vietnam veteran. So he is tough, but he's.
Hang on. Were you saying that Joker isn't a wannabe tough guy, or that Travis Bickle wasn't a wannabe?
The Joker is not a wannabe tough guy.
Right.
Until Joker. The switch is flipped.
I don't even think he's a wannabe tough guy at that point. I think he just lashes out.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, remember Travis Bickle, you know, the whole, he's standing in the mirror.
You talking to me?
Like, he's practicing how he's going to hurt people.
Right.
And he's going to try and orchestrate events where he can hurt people. But it won't be his fault.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
And
right.
That's not what Arthur Fleck's
doing. That's not what he's doing.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair. So, yeah. So he gets jumped by these guys, and then he has to go talk to his social worker. And it's just this very awkward. It's interesting because it's almost an introspective look where he's like, look, I'm about to snap.
Right.
Like, because he asks her to increase his meds, and she was like, why? And he's explaining, he was like, I'm tired of feeling bad. And it's like this, like, you can see from the jump that he has an interesting introspective look at himself, where he's like, this is going to turn bad, and I'm telling you now, I need help. And they're kind of just like, yeah. And that's probably what the system was like back then.
I mean,
it's still like that. Where it's just like, they do a check-in and they're like, okay, you haven't killed anybody, see ya. And sends him on his way.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is, too, is he says, increase my meds. And she says, you're already on seven medications.
Yeah.
So she's like, she's basically saying, like, you're on all these different things to level you out. And also, that could
be part of the problem, right? Isn't like more medicine is necessarily a good thing.
Right,
like
right.
You know, like,
and we'll talk about it. He eventually does get off his meds, and there's a turning point in the movie that. So, and we'll explore what that means. But he also has this disorder that I didn't catch from the small part.
I don't think he does.
Maybe, maybe not. Yeah. But this disorder that he shows, that he laughs uncontrollably in moments where he should be sad or scared or
his,
afraid.
His what is it, it's like a card that he, so he gets on this bus and there's a kid, you know, he's having a, it's interesting that this, the go-to shot with the Joker at this point is him leaning with his head against like a police car. Mm-hmm. So we've got it like a few times recently. But he has, sees this kid and he has this really genuine interaction where he's making the kid laugh. And the mom is just like, hey, don't
stop
talk to
bothering my kid.
And he's like, I wasn't. And then the mom kind of snaps at him and he starts laughing.
This is the point where in the beginning of the movie, we're supposed to feel bad for him. And I think it's
which I struggle with.
And I think it's the same way that you feel bad for Travis Bickle, the same way that you feel bad for Rupert Pupkin.
I feel bad for him until he's does something violent.
There's a point. And Todd Phillips said, you're supposed to until you don't.
Right.
This movie is not supposed to be an apology or to justify his actions.
This is something society struggles with, I think, is that one, we've lost the capability of nuance, but there's a difference between a reason and an excuse.
Yeah, that's true.
And so this shows you the reason he's becomes the Joker, but it doesn't excuse
why he's the Joker.
You're not supposed to agree with it,
right?
But you're trying to understand him, and that's again why I think this movie is smart, is because you're seeing the progression of his, you know, the downfall of this man and his psychological state, and he's having a bad day, and everyone's beating him up, and at this one point he breaks, and that's not to excuse it, but if you want to understand why the Joker, this is an explanation for why the Joker is the way he is. The Joker is a heinous supervillain.
He's a murderer. He's probably one of the worst.
He is a terrible person. You're not supposed to say, yay, Joker killing people. That's not the point. But you're supposed to understand, why would the Joker become the way he is?
That's why I really struggle with the way that Harley and Joker were represented in Suicide Squad. And people are just like, oh, I want a relationship like Joker and Harley. It's like, no, you don't. Like, he broke, that woman was a professional. He broke that woman.
Yeah.
Like, Lord knows what he did to her. And then he threw her in a vat of chemicals.
Right.
Like, that's not an okay relationship.
But that's the problem that people are going to have that are coming out of this movie that are saying, I walked out, or it's terrible, this and that, is that they don't understand that nuance there. There is a complete difference. Joker is not the hero. He is not the good guy. He's the main character of this film, but that doesn't mean that he's a good guy. He's just the subject of the film. And this is an answer. But you have the question, why is Joker Joker? Here's your answer.
But people also misunderstood Travis Bickle, right? Like, that's what inspired the guy who shot Reagan.
So this has been going on for decades, and I mean longer than that, books, you know, art and media telling stories, this has gone on. But I think people have to understand that, though, is that Joker is not a good person, and you feel sorry for him at first, but then you don't. And I'm the same way with Travis Bickle, right? Like, at first you feel bad for Travis Bickle, but when he goes and he tries to assassinate a presidential candidate, I don't feel bad for him at that point. Lock him up, right? There's a breaking point, and he only lucks out of going to jail. Like, he is shown as a hero at the end of that movie. Spoilers for 1976 or whatever.
Oh, you can spoil that one, but I can't spoil Shutter Island.
Well, it's not necessarily a twist, but it's he's shown as a hero in that, but he lucks into it because if he didn't get foiled in his assassination attempt, he would have been in jail, right?
Right,
but he gets
right.
away and he lucks into it and becomes
a
hero.
Well, and the Joker, there's a point in the movie where the Joker could have become a hero.
Could have.
Yeah.
On the subway.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of does.
Yeah.
Not in a good way.
He's embraced by a certain aspect of the population, but like, he could have been Bernie Getz.
Yeah.
You
for
know?
Sure. For and sure.
Also, the laughing thing is a real condition.
It is, but it's, I wonder if like,
pseudo bulbar effect.
Yes, it is real, but like, my point is, I wonder if it's real for him. And I mean, we get into kind of what happened, like when we talk to the mom in the past, when we get like that little flash of like, she's like, I never knew he was always laughing. Like, he was always a happy boy. So I'm like, oh, maybe it is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're dealing with a Joker where you're just like, maybe it is. I don't, you know? So he's on this bus and he starts laughing and the mom's like, what the f-? And, he shows her the card, and of course he's trying to contain it.
He's got these cards to explain
what his condition is.
So people to try in those moments he can't. So he's like, hey, I'm not being a dick.
Right.
This is
what I've got.
It's going. So awkward, and at this point still, because he hasn't done anything bad at this point, you feel so bad for him because you're like, here's this guy getting beat up, having a terrible day. He tries to be nice to this kid. He's still being shut down.
Right.
And he has this uncontrollable laughter, and you're like, geez, this guy.
Tough.
Yeah.
So he goes home and we're introduced to his mom. And they've got kind of a weird relationship. And this was the first time where I was like, I wonder, like, when she references Thomas Wayne. And I was like, all right, Well, that's a big character.
I didn't expect that.
I did not expect that.
I knew
I thought
was
this was going to be like its own thing.
I knew there was obviously going to be Gotham and Arkham Asylum.
Yeah,
I knew there were going to be Easter eggs. I didn't know it was going to have a through line.
I didn't anticipate, especially the ending.
Right.
I did not anticipate it being tied that directly
into the Waynes,
into the, to the Batman mythos.
And it's like they everybody's there. There's no Jim Gordon. Like, Jim Gordon's not here yet. But like the Waynes and Alfred,
Bruce Alfred,
and they're all here in this world.
Martha.
Yay. They don't say Martha, you know,
but
it's that.
So, but you know, much like Rupert Pupkin,
he's watching De Niro on kind of like a Johnny Carson style show.
Oh, which was clearly supposed to be Johnny Carson.
Absolutely.
I did not like De Niro as, I don't believe De Niro as a late night talk show host.
I don't believe De Niro was like a happy go lucky.
Yeah.
Late night. I could picture him as like Mark Maron, who is in the movie as well, but like that kind of style. But like the everyman did not really work for De Niro in this.
He's just a little stilted and not as loose as late.
And I know they wanted to do the nod to King of Comedy, but like also part of the point of De Niro as Rupert Pupkin is that he wasn't good.
Right.
Right. And so now to have him hosting the show
and everybody loves him.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So,
but that's, yeah. Well, we should mention that, Jerry Lewis plays Jerry Langford in King of Comedy.
And they wanted Carson. He wouldn't do it. They tried to get Carson, but he wouldn't do it.
But I mean, Jerry Lewis leans right into that role.
Jerry Lewis is great in that role. And I think something a lot of people that watch that movie today probably don't realize unless they're 55 plus.
Right.
Is that Jerry Lewis guest hosted The Tonight Show a lot.
Oh, really?
And so that was to see him playing a host of a late night talk show was very much believable
in
because
character.
He did it a lot, and he had his own talk show that flamed out, but he did guest host The Tonight Show a lot. He was one of the more frequent guest hosts. So
interesting.
It was, you know, like I said, that played as a very real world and believable for a film goer in 1981.
I could definitely see. I definitely felt the same about De Niro.
I think it's a great nod, though. I mean, the fact this movie's taking such inspiration from that film in particular.
I just wish De Niro was better at it. I just don't believe him as a late night talk show host.
No, I agree.
I hear you.
Back then.
But I love that, you know, I love that they use him. So now it's like, you know, by the end of King of Comedy, we see where Rupert Pupkin goes with hosting a talk show, and that's been his dream the whole movie. And here you have him in that Jerry Langford role. He's Murray.
Yeah, I don't know. Murray McFlurry.
His show is Murray, and so now he imagines himself
Franklin.
Murray Franklin. Okay. But now Arthur Fleck imagines himself like on the show, like Rupert Pupkin did.
Yeah, he's like in the audience, and he's you know, the monologue is coming to a close, and he's like, "I love you." He's like, "Oh, who said that?"
It's so good. This scene is so good, and Joaquin Phoenix is so incredible in this role.
Are there more Phoenixes? Is there a girl?
River.
Well, I mean, that are alive.
He has sisters.
Was there a sister?
I don't know.
That was an actor.
I don't know about that.
Okay,
but he does have sisters. Okay. I know.
So then he comes down and they have this embrace and they're talking for a second, and De Niro's like, "Oh, you're so wonderful, and I wish I had a son like you." And I was like, "Well, okay."
Yeah.
And then of course we snap back to reality, and
I just love the whole thing. And I think it's in one of the trailers where he stands up and he's like, "My name is Arthur Fleck, and my mother says blah blah blah." And I the whole thing is just amazing. You get this insight into this guy and his psyche, but when you hear how Murray responds to it is your first
clue.
You know, the light bulb goes on. We're like, wait a minute. And the other thing this film does, which I think is cool, is whenever he has these sequences, again, they transition right into them. So
right.
Arthur's watching the show with his mother like they do every night, and the camera pans into the TV, and Arthur's in the audience. And
right.
So you don't go into his eyes, and you don't go into a weird wavy dream sequence thing. The movie goes in and out, and so it makes you question for the rest of the movie what is real and what is not. And I really like that, how they're not spoon-feeding it to you. They're letting you guess, and you have to decide
right.
what's real. And Joker's always been an unreliable narrator.
Always.
And this one is just
as much. They double down on that in The Dark Knight, the Chris Nolan Dark Knight, where you never get any information as to who he really is.
Which is that from Killing Joke? Where he says, "My past is multiple choice."
Yeah, yeah, and basically that's what they do in this as well. Like they you think they give you an origin, and then all of a, as to who he is, like his real name, and then all of a sudden you're just like, "Nope, Like, now we have no information whatsoever. So he kind of he starts his day over again, and he goes back to work, and the guy, the dude who was the bad guy in the first season of
Barry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The first season of True Detective.
Oh,
the big guy.
Yeah. He's in Barry too. He's a bad guy.
Oh, is he? Oh, you're
Barry,
right. Yeah. He is. Yeah. Yeah. But he's also, he's the spaghetti
he's
monster.
He's got the Chechen accent or the Bosnian. Yeah, I can't remember which. Yeah.
European.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he kind of says, he's like, hey, I saw what happened. Like, that's, but this, the, before we get to that, there's a scene where, Joaquin Phoenix is kind of bent over, and you can see like his spot. And it's like, that's the way that I've always envisioned. Like, anytime the Joker has been drawn, he's always been drawn very thin and kind of wiry. And this is the first time, I think, on screen that you've actually seen that look come to life.
He lost 55 pounds for the role,
which is insane.
Yeah.
And they, in that Kevin McCarthy interview, he's like, look, I know it's your process and I'm not going to get into that, but like, how do you stay healthy? Like, do you work with somebody? And Joaquin Phoenix is like, I have like a doctor, and like, we have a strict regimen of like what I can eat and what I can't eat. And that's how, he's like, I don't just do it willy nilly. Like, I have like a process to make sure I don't die. But yeah, so like, you can see his spine, and it was, they talk about, Todd Phillips had talked about his shoulder, and like, I guess he had had an accident as a kid. So like, that shoulder, when his shoulder looks all jacked up, like, that's real.
Okay.
Like, that's really what his shoulder looks like. And he's like, when he lost all that weight, it just makes it look even weirder.
Pronounced.
Yeah, you can see everything more. So like, it was just that one scene where I was like, God, that,
like in a horror movie, if you saw some kind of zombie bent over eating someone,
right,
you saw their weird, like, he looks, it's
very
disturbing.
It's very disturbing.
Right.
Like, he's very gaunt in this. And I don't think I've ever seen him this. I guess he lost a bunch of weight for The Master, maybe.
Yeah, but this is
another
level.
Yeah, this is like Christian
Machinist,
Bale, the Machinist.
It's close.
Level.
It's not that bad, but it's close.
Yeah.
So the guy, he's
like, you know, here, take this. I saw what happened to you. That sucks. Take this. And he opens it. He opens the bag and there's a gun, and he's like, oh, I can't. He's like, just take it, like, you look, it's
and because
it's,
of his psychological disorders and his medication, he's like,
right,
I'm not supposed to have a gun,
right? And he's just like, yeah, it's a tough world out there, just take it.
Yeah.
He's like, okay. So he gets called in. I love the little person. Mm-hmm. He's great. Like, the scene with the little person, when we get to that scene, was one of my second favorite scene of the entire movie. So he goes inside, talks to the boss, and the boss is like, man, like, what are you doing? Like, he's, you know, the guy, you took that guy's sign. He's like, I didn't take it. Like, I got jumped, and then they got broke.
Why would I want a sign?
Why would I want the sign?
And this is, again, where at this point you're still feeling bad for him because everything's going wrong for him. And it's like, yeah, he's threatening his job. If you don't replace the sign, you're going to lose your job.
Well, he's going to, I'm going to take it out of your check.
But, like, he's, well, oh, okay. I thought at some point he alluded to the fact that, okay, maybe I just, in my head, I was thinking it. But it's like, he was beaten up.
The sign got smashed.
Yeah, and the sign got smashed. And now they're, instead of, you know, I'm sorry what happened to you, whatever, he's like, yeah, you're going to need to get that sign back. And it's just like, anything that could go wrong is going wrong for this guy.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's, not to get too political, but like, when some of these mass shootings happen, you don't get any idea leading up to that guy, to the moment of the shooting. You don't know what has happened in that guy's life or that person's life 2 days prior. You know, it could have been one thing that snaps, and that's kind of what we're dealing with here. And I can see where that would be problematic for some people.
Well,
I get that.
I think the main point, what you're trying to get to, is it never excuses those terrible actions.
It does not.
But what it does is shine a light on mental health and to say that we should take mental health seriously.
I think not to get too into a certain amendment, but I think it's twofold. I think there is a mental health issue, and I think there's also the Second Amendment issue. I think that they go hand in hand, and they're both things that need to be re-looked at, in my opinion. So he goes home, and kind of the same deal, you know, this is where we run into Zazie Beetz, where I was like, oh, nice. Like, good to see her.
Mm-hmm.
They have an interaction where, it's fairly normal. Like, it's not like she kind of says, the apartment building sucks.
Yeah. And they get stuck in the elevator. The power is like flickering and everything, and they get stuck. And here's another nod to Taxi Driver. She looks at him like, this place sucks. Life sucks here. And she does the finger gun to her head and goes, poof. I mean, that's.
And he kind of laughs.
The famous Travis Bickle.
Right.
When he puts the gun to his head and blows. So.
Right. And then they get off the elevator, and he kind of turns around. He's like, hey, and does the same thing, but in a much creepier manner.
Right.
Like, he's got longer hair. And so, like, when he does it, his hair moves. It was just very not as funny as when she did it.
Yeah, I mean, he's very, Joaquin Phoenix is very disturbing looking in this movie. He's frail. He does
have teeth are all jacked
up. Yeah, he just, he's supposed to. I mean, this is the guy playing the Joker, so.
Right, Joker pre-Joker, right.
Yeah, but it's like, he would scare most people in an elevator with a small child, and this guy, especially doing finger guns.
Sure,
like,
yeah, right.
It's creepy.
So, next day.
Nobody wants to be in an elevator with somebody fingering themselves.
Or, no. Well, I mean, it depends on the situation, I guess. So next day he's working at a children's hospital, and this is the first time we see what looks like absolute joy on his face. Like
when
he's
spinning the sign in the beginning, he's very happy.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. I guess he is. Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
you know, that's the first time, the very beginning, we're like, oh, this guy's happy. He's doing well at his job until the kids beat him up. Like,
right.
You always see him having a pretty good, like he's giving everything his all and bad stuff happens to him.
And that's bad. Lots of bad stuff. So, yeah. So he goes and he's doing an amazing job. Like, he's doing exactly what he should be doing. He's entertaining these kids. And then, unfortunately, the gun that he was given drops out of his pants and slides across the floor.
So awkward. Yeah. He goes and, like,
picks it up.
He goes to get it, but his big feet are kicking it.
Yeah.
And then he goes and puts it away, and he's like, shh. Right. Like,
he's like, oh, no, no.
Don't tell anyone.
And then, of course, he calls. I guess he has to call on a payphone, and the boss is like, what the are you doing? What are you bringing? He's like, it's a prop. And
he tried
like,
to play it off, but.
So they fire him.
Yeah.
And he goes, is this where we get to the train?
I think it's on the way home. He's on the train because he's got that gun still. The reason he has the gun is for protection. He didn't bring it to the children. I mean, obviously, Arthur is not a stable person, and he has these issues or whatever. He shouldn't have a gun. But the point is, he brought it to his job for protection. He was getting beat up. The guy gave him a gun for protection, so he had it with him for his trip to and from work.
Right.
And obviously, that wasn't a good move, but he didn't have bad intentions at this hospital.
No,
it's his
totally,
job.
Totally.
So, but unfortunately, it fell out. But on the way home, it's like,
you're
we
right.
See,
we do go to the, we get on the train.
But now we.
So we get these three guys, turns out to be Wayne employees.
Yeah.
Wayne Foundation, or Wayne Industries employees.
Yeah. Three Patrick Batemans.
Very much Patrick Batemans.
They're stockbrokers.
And they're giving this woman some. And here's the. There's some issues I take. If we're going to set this in the 80s, you got to be authentic. And when they start saying, like, bro. And I'm like, I feel like that's not an 80s thing. I feel like that's a 2019 thing where that where like
I feel
that
like it came
word,
back. I think people
oh,
were,
is that right?
Yeah, I feel like it went away for a long time and came back.
Okay.
So I get that that contextually it feels very present day,
but I
do think people said it back then.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I felt like the way that he was using it felt like 2019 and not 1984.
That's probably a poor choice on the act. Part of the actor
maybe
but these three guys are being total douche nozzles, harassing this woman,
right,
trying to like, oh, I've got a french fry, putting a bag of fries in her face,
and then he's like, he's being nice to you, like, talk to him.
Yeah,
it's
total,
like the things that we are dealing with still today.
Yeah.
And the girl kind of gets up and walks away, and the Travis Bickle, Arthur Fleck is sitting there, and he starts the condition kind of kicks in maybe, and he starts laughing, and the guys kind of jump him and they beat him up a little bit. And then all of a sudden he pulls that gun and blows two of them away and shoots one. I did think it was kind of funny that he shot the other one in the ass. I don't know why that made me laugh, but it like just one
that's
of those
kind of what the Joker would do.
It is.
You know what I mean?
He would, like, he would,
yeah.
Yes, I agree. And this is the first taste of the real Joker. This is what we get. And he kills the two.
The first two are self-defense. The last one
is getting the crap beat out of him.
Yes.
So at this, I mean, that was a reaction. That's why he had the gun. So at this point, you're like, well, they're beating the crap out of him. He's defending himself.
The last one.
But the guy's running away.
And he shoots again. He shoots him again, I guess, like the back of the leg.
Yeah.
And he falls down, and then he unloads. Like, he doesn't even think twice. He just unloads in him.
And then it seems like he snaps out of it after that. He
right.
didn't realize what he
Does
did.
Does he run
until,
away?
I think he kind of just, yeah, he like kind of.
Oh, no. It's. So the guy is like, it's after the
shoot.
Yeah, they exit the subway and then he runs after him. That's what it is.
And they shoots him. He collapses on the stairs.
Right.
And then he
shoots him again.
Arthur's like, holy, you know, he kind of wakes up from what did I just do? You know, he's freaked out about
but
it.
But this is when he goes back to the apartment and he knocks on Zazie Beetz's door and they like fall into each other.
He's still in his clown makeup.
Right.
Yeah, and he's all like jacked up on adrenaline. And
right. And so we'll get into it, but I feel like it's the way that they play certain things is brilliant. We talk about how, like in The Sixth Sense, you can kind of, if you look for it, you can pick up on it.
Right. The rules work.
In this one, when it reveals what it reveals, it's just like, wow, okay, well, we've done it. Like, now we know where we are.
Yeah.
So
there are clues, and there are certain characters that you don't see other characters talk to.
But
you don't see the mother talk to Zazie Beetz. You know what I mean? There are certain.
But they're never in the same place.
Well, right, but that's kind of what I'm saying, though.
So here's the, but
conveniently, what I'm saying is they're never put in a moment right. where you can see another character interact with them.
Right. So spoilers, obviously we know, but the entire Zazie Beetz relationship is all in the Joker's head.
The character's real, but the relationship is not.
Right.
And if you felt like it came on pretty fast between elevator meeting and then now I'm a weird clown guy and I'm going to make out with you because that's hot right. for some reason.
Right.
And then we're in this great relationship no matter how awkward and bad it turns out. Right. If that felt weird, there's a reason.
There's a reason right. it feels weird, yeah. So he goes home and I can't tell. This is when he starts taking his meds. And I can't tell, like, there's a scene where he's...
Well, he stops taking his meds because he talks to the social worker and
they cut funding.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He can't
that's right.
take his meds anymore.
Right, he's like, where do I get my meds? And they're like, oh.
She's like, huh?
I couldn't tell you. So I do kind of take another issue where it's like, he becomes the Joker because the system is failing him. Like, so, like, I could see where that would also be problematic, I guess, a little bit.
Well, I mean, but that's the point the movie's trying to make, though.
Yeah, no,
the
totally.
System
but I feel like
people.
It's an excuse rather than... what do we talk about?
Well, I don't think you're supposed to say that it's good he's the Joker because the system failed.
No, that's true.
But you're supposed to understand why he became
yeah.
the Joker.
Because okay.
It's not an excuse. It's a commentary. I mean, just like with anything else that's trying to make a statement, I mean, you're not necessarily saying it's the reaction is forgivable or excusable.
Right, right.
But it's like, how did he get there? Well,
okay.
I mean, we need
that
to look at
sense.
Mental health and we need to take care of people that need it. And it's not say, oh, well, they did this because of you. And that's
I mean, you can have an illegitimate reaction to a legitimate
yes.
set of circumstances.
Yeah,
you know
fair.
What I mean?
That's
it's
fair.
Like, you know, if your wife is cheating on you, you're right to be upset. You're wrong to punch her.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like
you punch the dude.
Right. Like if you punch her, no one's going to talk about the things that she did bad. They're
right.
going to talk about the fact that you hit her.
Yeah, that's
right.
Fair.
That's an illegitimate reaction to a legitimate set of circumstances.
That makes sense.
Same or a legitimate grievance.
Yeah. And the same with these terrible, inexcusable killings. That's all people are talking about. But there still is an issue out there of
right.
mental health that isn't always addressed. It's getting better. But the system is failing a lot of people. And even if it isn't mental health, look at the price of insulin.
Yeah,
look
sure.
at people rationing their insulin and they don't take it and they end up dying because they can't afford it.
Well, and mental health is, you have the other issue of, you know, the system's difficult to navigate, but if you need it for mental health reasons, you're already at a disadvantage because your brain isn't working properly.
Right, right,
you
right.
know, so it's like it's already difficult to navigate, but at least somebody with insulin is theoretically, you know, unless they have other issues, but, you know.
There's a problem solution. It's like take
right,
this.
They,
yeah.
they, but their mind is working okay.
Right.
So they can at least have that tool to help them navigate this difficult to navigate system. But like I had a friend with epilepsy and mm-hmm. he had lots of issues because I've shown you the pictures of him. Like
sure.
entire side of his face is black and blue from seizures and banging his head on the ground. And it's like that took a toll on his mind.
Right.
And he had trouble navigating this. He couldn't hold a job because of that, and he couldn't navigate the system to get the meds, and the, you know what I mean, it was like
no,
so
totally, totally.
It's just this snowball effect for people. Now if he walked into a liquor store and just started shooting people randomly, well then that needs to be addressed. That doesn't that there it's a reason
right.
but it's not an excuse. He would still have to pay for that
right,
you know.
Well, it's the whole Chris Benoit thing. I mean that's they blame CTE. Like I said, his brain, he was maybe early 40s, but
yeah.
his brain was like the brain of an 80-year-old
right.
from all the concussions and undiagnosed things. And it's just like, yeah, that, I mean, and it led to some bad stuff. Like he did some bad things.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to this movie. He doesn't get the meds. And this is, I feel like is he poisoning his mom?
No.
But he... Like, isn't he crushing up his meds? You think he's just crushing up her meds and putting them in the oatmeal? Or do you think he was trying to kill his mom.
This. Do you remember
I
this?
Don't remember.
There's
I
a
don't.
Scene, that, like, the next scene where he's making her food.
Yeah.
He's got open pill bottles and he's crushing up pills.
Oh.
And I thought, I was like, either he's trying to, because then how did she get into the hospital?
Because of the stress, because the police called her and said Arthur's wanted and they said she had a breakdown. And all
or
that.
Is that what he's saying? We never hear a doctor say that. We hear Arthur Fleck say that.
Well, sure. That's
and him being the unreliable narrator. Yeah. I feel like
I don't remember seeing that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a scene where he's got like a bowl of oatmeal and he's crushing up.
I'd have
meds.
To revisit that. Yeah. I'll watch that. I want to see it again. I just didn't get a chance.
So
But so he's so the stand-up comedy thing, maybe we should go to the open mic.
Yeah, so he goes to an open mic, and this is where we get Gary Goldman, I think, is the first guy, and Sam, I want to say it's Morrell, but I don't think that, I don't think, but either way.
But as soon as he gets off his meds, I think all the lines start to blur of what's real or what's not.
Yeah.
So in this scene, he's taking notes because he wants to be a stand-up comedian.
Right.
He goes and he's watching. And
I like that he's laughing at like the inopportune times.
His
laughing at the setups.
His inappropriate laughter's going off. But you don't see anyone around him like, I mean, that would be disturbing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
The comedian would certainly call you out.
Most likely.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see a show where anyone yells something, even if it's like, I love you, usually they say, I love you too. Or they, you know, they make a joke, right?
Right.
This guy is inappropriate laughing throughout and no one ever addresses it. And so I just wonder if this is really.
A nod to another Scorsese movie, Cape Fear.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
remember
for
when,
sure.
When he's at the, they're watching Problem Child and he just thinks it's the funniest movie ever. Yeah.
So
Sam Morrell, it is that guy's name. Yeah.
So I wonder if that is really a delusion or if he really is there, because, you know, I think that you can question almost any of the scenes, you know, after.
I would tend to think that one's real because he's laughing inappropriately. In his fantasy world, things work right.
Yeah.
You know
Chris,
what I mean?
Chris Reedus is also in this movie.
Who is?
The guy that we were just talking about.
Chris Redd?
Chris, yeah.
He was in it?
Yeah. There's a picture of him and Sam Morrell from the thing.
Oh.
I don't remember seeing him at all.
I don't remember seeing him, but there he is.
Okay.
Either way, so yeah, so he kind of talks to Zazie Beetz, and he's like, I've got a set this day, and they were like, you want to come? And she was like, okay. So he gets up there, and the laugh starts, and he can't keep it together, and then all of a sudden he tells this joke, and it sounds like it hits.
But it kind of pans out, and it shows him from the back, and this is very similar to Rupert Pupkin in King of Comedy, looking at the wall of comedians
right. And
the canned laughter that is clearly fake, because he's imagining. He has conversations with Jerry in his head. He has the talking to the wall, and there's laughter. And so you don't know it at the time, but now looking back,
right. It's
like all these people start cracking up, and that's clearly his fantasy of his jokes hitting, because his stuff isn't funny.
It's not funny.
And we see this clip later on, and it's not.
This is the... That's the first sign that things are not right.
But
we know things aren't right to begin with.
And then you also see Zazie Beetz, which this is their like first date, and she was creeped out by him earlier, and then he's telling these awful jokes, and she's
laughing.
We don't
know that she was ever creeped out by him. We never see that. We never see that she was there. They have that interaction in the elevator.
But I think she was kind of like, okay, go inside.
Sure.
That's what I mean. She was not...
I think she was, but we don't see that. Because I remember thinking like, oh, is she supposed to have interpreted that like she didn't?
Right.
Read it as weird, like
exactly. So,
she's like on board with his terrible jokes.
Yes,
you're like, this is weird. Why is she so connected with him all of a sudden when these aren't
this is weird
normal
right.
signs? Yeah,
and I was like, oh, man, don't make her Harley. Like, don't make her Harley.
It's too much.
It is too much. Yeah, and we've got enough of the Gotham influence already. So, I think the mom asks him to mail a letter, and then he opens the letter and he starts reading it. It's to Thomas. The mom has been writing to Thomas Wayne. Apparently the mom, who was in American Horror Story, actually, she's a recurring character on that.
His mother?
His mother, yes.
Yeah, she was also in 6 Feet Under.
Oh, I never saw that show.
Oh my God, so good.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that the Dexter show? Was Dexter on that show?
Yeah, it was pre-Dexter.
Yeah.
That's Frances Conroy. She's the mother in a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
You'd know her if you saw her. She plays the mother for like the last 3 decades.
Yeah.
She's been the mother.
Yeah. So he opens the letter, and we find out that she had been working for the Waynes at some point, and she believes in Thomas Wayne. And also, it is interesting, Thomas Wayne has always been kind of infallible.
Right.
He's always been the good guy. He's Jonathan Kent, basically, but well, not the DCU version of Jonathan Kent, but he's been like the moral center for Bruce.
We always talk about that Gotham City was saved by Thomas
Wayne.
He's a great person, you know, but you know, to be fair, it's also usually Bruce's recollection of his dad.
It's a hero. Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting when you,
and then we get like almost a Trump version of Thomas Wayne, where he says the city needs to be cleaned up. These people need to get it together.
This is the 1%,
the 1%,
the rich, the disconnected,
very disconnected,
right? Because they're talking about, what do you think about these people? And he just instantly goes into, oh, these are all criminals and
they're all jokers.
And,
they're all clowns. Yeah. And then, of course, it was like, well, that you just sealed your own fate, my friend.
But earlier in the movie, when we first meet the mother, she says, you know, oh, Thomas Wayne is a great man.
Right.
And I used to work for him. And he'll take care of us if he finds out, you know, because Arthur's checking every day for a return letter.
Right.
And they're never getting a response. And she's just like, he'll help us. If he knows what we're going through, he'll help us.
Right.
And so when he reads this letter,
he finds
after his
out,
mom goes to sleep.
We read that. I mean, it's handwritten. It's not like he's reading anything into it. But
the keywords are like, your son, Arthur, he's a good boy.
Do you remember when this was announced that there was a rumor that they were going to make Batman and the Joker brothers?
I don't remember.
Yeah, there was a rumor at one point where they're like, that's what's going to happen in this movie, is they're going to make them brothers.
I thought this was fascinating, and I did not see the twists and turns coming at all in this movie. And I thought they were great. I love this movie keeps you guessing.
Yeah.
Because at this, I'm like, well, this is certainly interesting. Where are they going with this?
Right.
And then as it devolves and gets
we
further,
find out
I'm like,
where it's going.
But I'm like, holy cow, this really
to
took
me,
me on a
honestly,
ride.
To me, that adds an interesting wrinkle to the whole Batman Joker relationship, and we'll get to why, but it's a very interesting.
But I think even if they did it, I mean, we always talk about the duality of, you know, Joker
the
and Batman,
yin to Batman's
yes,
yang.
And how one creates the other, and
it's also kind of nature versus nurture.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And if you take it a step further and then make them related, I just think that's a fascinating concept to explore.
I agree,
and they do for a little bit here, but so he reads this and he freaks out.
He does, and he tries to. Does he go to the
mom's locking herself in the bathroom? I'm not coming out until.
Oh my god, he's
yelling.
Like, I'm not mad, but what the f? Yeah.
Right?
So then. Does he go to the? Is this where she goes to the hospital, or does he?
Well,
go
he
to
goes
Wayne?
To,
where he goes to Wayne
subway.
Manor.
Okay, so he goes to Wayne Manor first, and we see Bruce, and it was just like,
and Bruce is
he's a boy,
is a child. He's like what 10?
Sure.
Oh, if even
he's at the right age. Let's put it that way.
Right.
They have like a swing set on the property. It's a huge Wayne Manor gated off. And I love this. The imagery. It's so creepy.
Oh my god! When he drops
Joaquin
down
with the nose walking.
Jesus.
So there's like you can see just above the wall and the gate of the manor, and Joaquin pops up. He's got a red nose on, and he does like the elevator down and pops up. It's so creepy and disturbing.
And
this
he has
little
his,
Bruce is like walking to like you know
they walk to the gate.
What you
the
tell
front
your kids
gate.
Never to do. You know.
Yeah. Right.
He's walking up to this creepy character, and you're just like, what is he going to do to this kid?
And I think, and it's interesting. He has like a genuine interaction with him where he's like, this is my brother. Like we're brothers. Like we have this, you know, he's trying to be nice and doing this. And here comes Alfred.
Well, but then he sticks his fingers in his mouth and makes
smile. Yeah. Right.
So creepy. And the kid just stands there and lets him do it.
And we get Alfred shows up, Alfred Pennyworth, and he kind of like gets in his face and he's like, what are you doing here?
But I also question again, all this stuff is post the meds. I mean, Alfred is this former Secret Service.
Well, it depends on which version you go with.
If that's true, we don't know that in this story.
But also, frail Joaquin Phoenix, who looks like he can't hardly even lift a gun. I mean, it's I just wonder if he really could hold Alfred through a gate. And, like, Alfred doesn't even fight back. Like, is he...
I know, I was like, just step to the side and break his arm.
There's a gate there, So
he puts his arms through the gate.
Right.
The iron gate. So like,
He's bigger. I feel like he would be able to. So I'm not saying he didn't go there, but I just wonder how much is his version of the event.
That's a good point. Yeah. Right? That's a good point. So, and this is where he says, I'm Penny Fleck's son. And Alfred's like, oh Christ.
Yeah, he's like, you're her son? Because he knows this name. He knows this woman.
He knows the Flex.
And then he's like, you know, get out of here.
He's like, look,
Master
man,
Bruce.
This isn't what you think. Like you need to go. Your mom was committed to Arkham. And he was like, why are you saying these things? Blah, blah. And this starts to flip. And then
after this is when the cops come.
Okay.
And then she has the stroke and goes in the hospital.
Okay. And I got to tell you this scene where, so they're at the hospital, and Arthur's sitting outside smoking a cigarette. The two cops who are not Gordon and Bullock, but look like
could
be Gordon and Bullock. They kind of start talking to him, and he's like, you're the reason she had the heart attack and starts a stroke. And he's kind of like leans in into them. And I thought I laughed at this scene where he gets up and walks into a door, but it's the exit door. And I was like,
it doesn't open. He just plows
right
into the glass.
And the guy's like, it's exit only. And I was like, I was like, that was all right. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. It looked very real. So I'm just like,
Sure. So he goes in and sits down next to his mom and talking to Zazie Beetz. And she's like, you want something to drink? He says, no. And then
we see Murray Franklin plays his clip.
Oh, that's right. They're in the hospital bed, and they play the clip, and then we see the clip.
The mom doesn't see it because she's like sedated.
Right.
But he's watching the show, and he's like, "Have you seen this guy? He's at a stand-up comedy, and look, he thinks he can do what I do." And he goes, "Watch this clip," and it's him at the comedy
club, real clip,
doing the terrible routine. Yeah. But you never hear the audience bust into laughter.
No.
It's very quiet, very awkward, as you'd expect. And then he's like, "Can you believe this Joker?"
Right. And that's where we. And then now we're off to the races. Now Gotham. Thomas Wayne has announced that he's running for mayor to help clean up Gotham.
And he sneaks into his event.
Right. But this is where the Jokers start showing up.
Right.
Is all, they all start showing up in masks. And I do think it's interesting, the idea that Thomas Wayne running for mayor was a plot point in Batman Earth 1 by Geoff Johns and Gary Frank. And it turns out that, like, so Oswald Cobblepot was mayor of Gotham and is super corrupt. Mm-hmm. And the Waynes were like, "I'm taking you out." And then that's in that book, the Penguin orchestrates the murder of the Waynes so that he can't run for mayor.
Gotcha.
Now, since the original subway killing of the Wayne Industries stock guys or whatever, the Joker movement has been growing. We have been seeing people with signs.
They've been calling him a vigilante.
But so the movement has grown and the Jokers, but now we're seeing people in masks and there's protests and people ask him, "Are you going down to the protests?"
It's like, no, why would I do that? Why would I'm not political. Yeah. I don't want to go down there.
Yeah.
So he sneaks into the Wayne event. And he comes face to face
with
Thomas.
Wearing that red belt, like whatever the
bellboy.
Yeah, it's
like an Usher.
Like a movie Usher.
And he's watching this movie, and I love the head fake here. It's at a movie theater, and Thomas Wayne's there, and you're like, "This is it."
You're right.
Right.
It's great,
I'm like, but I thought at one point I was like,
"If they, right?"
Well, that's later.
Zorro the Gay Blade is later.
Yeah.
That's the end of Zorro.
Well, the Mask of Zorro is what they were seeing originally.
Yeah.
Zorro the Gay Blade is what they're seeing. Like, that's your tell to what's about to happen.
Because there was a movie out at the time called Zorro the Gay Blade.
Yeah, yes.
That's what's on the marquee. But this one was like an Abbott and Costello thing or
something? Yeah, it was like a Laurel and Hardy. It was like an event.
Yeah, it was like
a museum. Were showing a Charlie Chaplin movie.
That's what it was.
I think they were showing Modern Times.
Maybe. So, yeah, he goes to the bathroom and our Fleck follows him in there and he's just kind of like, "You know, do you want an autograph, kid," or whatever? And the guy was like, "No, I'm Arthur Fleck." And Thomas Wayne's like, "Jesus Christ." And, it's Thomas Wayne that tells him, "Your mom was committed to Arkham. Like, she was not stable," blah, blah, blah.
Because Alfred says, "You have nothing to talk about." And he alludes
to it.
But here, I mean, Thomas Wayne's like, "You're the guy that showed up at my house." And he says, "Your mom was crazy. She came up with this infatuation. She was basically stalking him and making up that we
the
had
whole
an affair."
Thing. He's like, "I wouldn't touch your mother." Like, he was being very not Thomas Wayne. And that's the thing is, like, is that who Thomas Wayne was in this world, or is this Fleck's interpretation
of the
events?
The question. And then he punches him
in the mouth.
And then Joaquin Phoenix is like, "Dad, it's me, your son." And he keeps alluding to that. And eventually he punches him in the face and he says,
"He said you were adopted." He's like, "Your mom didn't even have you. Like, you were an adopted child." And I was like, well, that's even more interesting because now we don't know where this kid came from.
But and he says, "Stay the F away from my son. Or if you ever
come anywhere near my son again." Thomas, have I got news for you?
Yeah.
So the Joaquin kind of goes off the rails at this point. Does he go to Arkham? He goes to Arkham State Penitentiary, Arkham State Hospital.
First he does the, subway thing, right?
He goes,
the cops are chasing him on the subway first, I think, before.
Is that right?
I think so.
Okay.
Cause they're like, this is when they're like, "Are you going to the rally?"
I thought they were chasing him they're chasing him later on the way to his appearance.
Oh, okay.
Because he ducks them on the way.
Is that right?
He ducks them on the stairway.
This is where he goes and kills his mother.
Okay.
That's right.
I couldn't remember if it was before or after.
Yeah, because he basically escapes them and goes into the studio and does his segment.
Right, right.
Okay.
He goes back to the hospital and he suffocates his own mother. Well, his adopted mother.
Yeah,
no. He has to go to the hospital.
He has to go to the files.
He gets the files first at Arkham.
He talks to the guy from Get Out.
Is that who that was?
Isn't that the guy?
I don't think so. You mean the friend?
No, it's not. Maybe it's not Get Out. It's, God, what horror movie was that guy in? That guy looks familiar to me. He was in something.
I don't know. He could have been.
I can't remember. He's someone you know.
But it's a good scene.
I'm sorry. This is not even close. He was in, what was that art house movie I really liked that was directed by the Moonlight guy? I'm sorry. I'm just off my...
Yeah. Get it together, brother.
Oh, Beale Street?
Yes. He's the friend from If Beale Street Could Talk. Okay. He's a really good actor. I can't remember his name, but he's shown up in several art house things recently. But he's like the file
clerk.
He's
like the administrative assistant, what he calls himself. Yeah.
And so he
gives him the file, and he was like, well, that's true.
He's reading the file,
and he was like, you're her son? And he was like, yeah. He was like, well, you got to have like permission and blah, blah. And he was like, just give me the file.
But he says that she was in Arkham like for mental reasons. And he sees that the adoption papers with her name on it.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I can't give you this.
Right.
And he grabs it and runs away.
And he reads it all. And there's a lot of, he runs down the stairs and he starts reading about all this abuse. And we get a little flashback to a younger version of this woman.
He tells him when reading the files that her boyfriend abused him.
Right. Right.
And so she didn't stop it.
She didn't stop it.
That's when he's like, you're her son? Like, he's reading stuff about him. He's like, wait, who are you?
Right.
I got to put these files away now.
So the mom kind of says, she's like, I didn't know he was he was such a happy boy. He was always laughing.
Yeah, she calls him happy as a nickname throughout the movie.
Right.
Because he's always laughing.
Right. And this is it. Like, this is the final, this is the final straw. We go full Joker.
His whole life is a joke now.
Yeah.
It's basically what he's saying. Like, he knows not everything he thought is not true.
Right.
He's having a total breakdown.
And this is it. So he goes, and this is where he goes into what we assume is his girlfriend's apartment, and he kind of sits down, and she has a reaction.
This is the big reveal.
Which
is so creepy when he's walking through and looking at the kids' art paintings from school and stuff and touching them. Like, it's such a weird, sinister, because at this point I'm like, what is he going to do to these people?
Well, they haven't even revealed yet that it doesn't exist. Like, this is the reveal where she's like, you're the guy from
but
A,
what I'm
A
saying
A
is going into it, it doesn't matter what we know, he just killed his mother for crying out loud.
Right.
Now it's like he's walking through and there's a kid, they're clearly showing you kids' artwork he's touching. We're like, this is creepy,
right?
And you're like, is he gonna go kill them now? But yeah, she comes out as he's sitting hunched over on the couch,
and she's like, what are you doing here?
You're the guy from down the hall, right?
And he kind of like turns. Yeah, right, you're the
and
guy from down the hall.
We've just seen her and him on dates and with the mother in the hospital,
right?
And here's the tell right here, and it's like, oh my gosh. So
and they do like a flash of like all the scenes that we saw of them together.
They show you the scene without her,
and then she's not there. And then
she was never really there.
She wasn't. Yeah, it's true.
Just like Joaquin Phoenix's movie. You were never
right.
What I did there?
So we have to assume that he killed both of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Joker that I know kills them both.
Yeah. I didn't take it that way, though.
We don't see what happens.
He leaves, and there's no, like, later on, we see different things alluding to killing, like bloody footsteps and stuff.
But,
and this one, he gets up and walks away, and we never see that he killed them. But
I mean, the Joker that I've always known would have killed both of them.
Yeah.
Including the kid. Like, that's the thing. The Joker is not,
I don't think he's Joker yet, though. He's right there, but
I think he's Joker. When he kills his mom, I think that's it.
He's becoming Joker, but I don't think he's all the way there, because when we get to the scene where the coworkers, I don't think the Joker would have let one of them live.
Yes, the Joker would have.
That's probably true.
I thought if he was Joker, he would have locked the door. Oh, you couldn't reach it. Sorry. And kills him. That's Joker.
That's true.
That's exactly fair.
Yeah.
I did not expect that, because that showed, I think he still had compassion. Joker's crazy. He does not have any.
No.
Yeah, everything's a joke to him.
Right.
So he goes home. He gets a call from Murray and says that they want him on the show.
His assistant.
And he was just like, how about Thursday? And he was like, okay. So then there's a knock at the door, and it's the big guy.
Yeah.
And
this is that creepy scene from the trailer where he's putting on his makeup.
Yeah.
He's just got the white face on, and he's painting his tongue with it and everything. It's very creepy.
Very
looking.
Creepy. Big guy and little guy from the clown agency. And the big guy's like, look, the cops have been coming around. Oh, there's a whole scene where when he gets fired from the clown agency, says, he was like, yeah, it's Barry's gun. And they were just like, he's like, oh, no, don't bring my name into it.
This is great. When he punches out, I'm like, this is crazy.
I thought he was going to kill him. Yeah. Like, he comes back. He's like, I completely forgot to punch out.
He
punches the
Phoenix is masterful in this whole movie. But this is one of the standout scenes, like, where I was just like, it really showed him breaking down and his finding humor in things that aren't really funny. They're crazy and creepy. And he comes back. Punches the thing, the clock in machine off the wall. I forgot to punch out.
And then he spray paints.
And then he spray paints.
It's don't smile.
Yeah, don't forget to smile. He spray paints over the
it's almost
forget
like
to.
The Catwoman would say, hell here.
Don't smile.
He's like, the cops have been asking some questions. He's like, what did you tell them? And he kind of starts hemming and hawing. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, blows this dude's brains out. Like, all over the floor. You know, he The little guy is like, holy.
He's in the corner cowering.
Yeah, and, right. Yeah. And there's blood everywhere. He's got blood on his face. He's sitting in a pool of blood. And then.
This is the most violent thing in the movie.
I don't know. I think the
De Niro.
De Niro.
Okay.
When he kills De Niro on TV.
Yeah, I mean, that's one shot. I just feel like this one was like, he's splattering. Like, there's a lot of.
And it caught you off guard.
Yeah. It did.
In a way that the other one did too, but you'd already had it happen once, you know?
Right.
But this is gruesome. I mean, blood is splattering onto his face. Like, this is a very violent. Like, this movie, for as much as it was touted, oh my gosh, I can't believe they made this movie, and that it wasn't that crazy. Like, there are violent movies. This is more psychological.
Right,
yeah.
But this is one of the more disturbing ones, and then, the end is crazy.
The guy, he kind of sits there, and he's like, you know what? He's like, you were the only one that was nice to me, so you
can
go.
No, that was at the very end. He's like, go or whatever.
Yeah, you can get out of here. Yeah. He says, like, you were the only one that was ever nice to me.
That's when he
is that when he unchains the door? Okay. Yes. So he goes, go ahead and go. And I do like where he's like reaching up. And I was like, oh, you're going to die.
That's the Joker right there. Like, you're he was messing die. With him is what
right.
he thought.
Yeah.
He's going to kill him.
And he stands up and he unlocks the door. And he was like, you know what? You were the only one that was. He was almost like the Billy Masters. Like, boy, am I glad I called that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he runs away.
He lets him go.
So he gets himself clean. He gets himself cleaned up. He gets on his new suit. He has dyed his hair green. He's putting on the makeup.
And I don't like this song choice. This is the
interesting
song. This
choice.
Is from the trailer when he's dancing on the steps. This is that money shot you see on all of the advertising and the dancing. Joaquin Phoenix's body language. I mean, again, this is an incredible song choice.
It was an interesting song choice.
Yeah.
One, because the history of the song.
Yeah,
because
it's Rock and Roll Part 2 by Gary Glitter. All the money from this song is going to a convicted child molester.
Correct.
But I also thought tonally, I didn't like it. When I hear this song, I think of like a baseball game.
Jock jams.
And they won't play it in stadiums anymore because of this. That's why I was really surprised that they utilized it. But
why choose that song? Because there's a lot of songs that, you know, make you feel powerful and confident. There's so many choices they could have made, and aside from the horrible history surrounding it, it just didn't fit to me. I'm like, I concur.
Like beyond the backstory on the song,
right?
The song choice, I didn't get what they were trying to accomplish.
It took me out
here.
Of it. I'm like, oh, this is not the tone of the movie.
Yeah,
and I mean, they made the movie, so I know that.
They use "This Is Life" a lot, and that's I mean that's the other song that is used a lot. But it is interesting. There's two parts of this. So this staircase, but this one in general, has been used throughout this entire movie as like Arthur Fleck's trek. And like he's beaten down and he has to keep going up these steps and he's hunched over and he's not, you know, it's a struggle. Where now
he's dancing,
we're full Joker and he's loose and he's free. The other interesting thing is.
And he's going down the steps.
He's going down. Yeah. Exactly. If you watch it in standard. Like in the standard frame rate, in the normal speed, it's herky jerky. His movements are very awkward. But when they slow it down, it's very graceful. And I was like, man, if they did that on purpose to show like what it really looks like to you, me, to all of us, it's odd. But when they slow it down, if that's what he sees himself as in his head, like that's a really kind of brilliant choice to do that both ways so that like you're seeing how he sees himself but how he actually is to the outside world.
Yeah. I think it's a two-part though as well. I do think that he thinks that he's a better, more graceful dancer than he is.
Yeah.
But it's also the progression of the character. Like in the beginning he does the dance, which again, hats off to Joaquin Phoenix. His choreography, I mean, he worked with a choreographer, his movements, it's just amazing how unsettling they are, but he does this like almost ballet-esque choreography and it gets better as he becomes the Joker. And so I think there's the progression of him becoming a character that is more confident,
right?
But then I also think it does question what is real, because is he really that good or is he seeing himself as that graceful?
Sure. And then we've got this is where we
the
see
cops
the,
chasing
and
down
isn't,
the stairs.
It's almost Exorcist like where you see the two cops out of focus at the top of the steps when you're focused on him, but you see these two figures and then all of a sudden it's the two cops and he takes off.
It's very French Connection.
It is very French Connection.
They chase him into the subway and he's going in and out of the subway
trying to lose him. I love that movie. That movie's so good.
But it's a great looking scene, but all these people are going downtown for the protest.
Right.
And so he ends up taking one of the Joker masks. He kind of hides among the crowd. And then these two cops are pushing these guys and the people that are already upset with the government and the cops and everything, they push back.
Right.
And this guy ends up shooting. One of the cops shoots one of the Joker guys.
Right.
And then everyone else starts tackling them and he escapes amidst the chaos.
And the Joker kind of does like a little wave and bolts and he goes to the Murray show. And this is where we see Mark Maron, who, of course, had some dumb things to say.
Yeah. It was cringeworthy seeing him in this comic book movie after his statement about comic book movies.
Right.
I just was, ugh.
So they kind of had an interaction, and we see De Niro not in the Murray character. Like, obviously, the Murray persona is an on-camera thing.
Right. He's off-camera. This is him being like a normal, more friendly type of person. Yeah. As friendly as this guy can be, where he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Yeah,
right. You do whatever you want. And Mark Maron's kind of like, look, dude, like, this is kind of effed right now. Like,
yeah.
He's going to walk on camera? Like, we're
going
to we have
clown riots going on in the
and
streets.
And this guy's going to walk on like this?
Well, and he also calls him Murray, and he's like, it's Mr. Franklin
Mr.
to
Franklin.
You.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, calm down, dude. Yeah. Like, it's cool. It's good.
Right.
And then this is where he says, hey, Murray,
can you call me Joker? You know,
when
like
you introduce
you,
me,
when you
can you call me Joker?
You know, like when you called me a Joker on your show last time, I was like, oh, Murray.
And yeah. I like this too, because it shows you how when Murray was doing it, it's not like he meant anything by it. And he's like, look at this Joker, you know, and it was an offhand comment. He would never remember it. But look, it's someone who's so psychologically disturbed and how they remember that one thing and how it can make,
This is a scene right out of The Dark Knight Returns. This is the scene where the Joker, who quote unquote has been rehabilitated, is being brought onto, I think it was Letterman, and snaps on live TV, kills the entire, this is in the comic book, kills everybody. And there is a character who I think is Dr. Ruth. Yeah. Sitting next to him.
Okay. Yeah, that they don't call her that. They call her a different name, but she's clearly supposed to be Dr. Ruth.
But I'm pretty sure
like
that, like,
Beth or something.
I'm pretty sure that in The Dark Knight Returns, Dr. Ruth is sitting next to him on the couch.
A long time since I read about it. That sounds right.
Yeah. So it's very, like, when Todd Phillips says, I didn't take anything from the comic books, I'm like, well, I call bull on that.
Yeah.
Well, right. Again, I think we addressed this earlier, but there's a difference between using the origin story and pulling things. I mean,
I agree, like from
Taxi Driver, it's not like he just used that story as a template, but he's pulling things from it.
But don't say that I didn't.
But did he write it?
Who's that?
Did Todd Phillips write this?
Yeah.
I think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he sits down, and this is where the conversation starts to, he's like, play that tape again. And like, it becomes very contentious between the two. And then he's like, you know, when I killed those three guys on the subway, like, I just felt better.
Like, whoa,
and
whoa.
He's like,
yeah.
And Murray's
confessing?
Like, I'm sorry. What? It's almost like that scene in the, was it The Interview when Eminem comes out as gay?
Yeah.
And he was like, wait. What just happened?
But, you know, Joker is saying these things. He's very awkward. It's much like a Joaquin Phoenix interview on talk shows,
where
especially the earlier ones where he's very awkward and he's saying things that he's like, what is this guy talking about?
Right.
And he confesses to him. He's like, are you confessing to the murder of these three young men?
And
he's
like,
yeah. And he's like, you don't think that's funny? Or he says, you think that's funny? And he goes, well, comedy's subjective. And he
goes on this
whole spiel, and it's very creepy. And, but everyone on the show wants him to cut it, but Murray's like, no, let's go.
And he keeps going and going.
And this is live.
It is live. And just when it reaches the pinnacle.
But you remember, he's been rehearsing, much like you see De Niro in those other Scorsese movies, rehearsing what he's going to do.
Right.
Arthur's been rehearsing a joke, knock, knock.
Right.
And then who's there? And
he blows
his
brains out.
So he gets the gun, but he does the joke different this time.
He says knock, knock. And he's like, it took you, you know, reading the joke.
He's reading it off.
He's screwing up his rhythm for the joke too.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'd be interested it's a fictional thing, so you can never, it's not, but yeah. I wonder if his reaction would have been different.
Had he not screwed up the joke. Maybe.
Right. Because it's like, you know, he sits down, he's like, I'm going to tell you a joke. And as he starts into the joke, Murray breaks his rhythm
and disrupts
the joke. So he can get the laugh instead.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you wonder if he changed
the
victim.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, it's very true. So he
turns it on Murray and blows his brains out.
Yeah. And then he gets arrested. And then as he's being taken into the back of the police car, this is the scene where he's leaning his head up against the window. And then Gotham is in flames at this point.
Right.
Like the riots have started, and the jokers are doing whatever they're doing.
They've seen him on TV now, and he's become a symbol of this rebellion. I mean, they knew about his actions before, but now that they've seen this,
they've
gone crazier.
Right. And then he's hit by a truck, like this
ambulance.
Giant truck. Oh, it was an ambulance. Yeah. Okay. And then two guys in Joker masks realize who he is, pulls him out of the wreckage, and puts him on top of like the car itself.
Yeah.
This is where we see the Waynes walking out of the Monarch Theater after seeing the marquee.
I think that's at the very end when he says you wouldn't understand the joke.
No, it happened. Like
you see them walking out of the theater, but I think Kevin's right. You get the actual reveal that that the Waynes are killed in that alley.
Yeah, like, when he's talking
when
to the
he's talking to the the second social worker,
it's set up
Arkham,
and you're
or
like,
psychiatrist.
Yeah,
or,
and you're like, holy crap! Like you see them leaving the movie among amid all the chaos.
Right. You see,
but they bring him. They bring him out, and you know, after he's laying on the top of the car, he gets up.
Right.
And I think this is a brilliant shot.
Oh yeah.
Where he takes the blood from inside his
mouth
and
makes his own
and makes the Joker smile. I just thought the shot, the way it's filmed, the body language of Phoenix, like it is a disturbing. Perfect.
And that's why I also say that he wasn't fully the Joker yet.
Until just now.
Because that's when he's fully the Joker.
I
that's
gotcha.
The missing piece of the puzzle is when
the
he puts
smile.
When he puts the smile into place. Now he's
I agree.
The
and
Joker.
He has a following and he's,
you know, now he's got his own henchmen.
Right. So we see it's crazy because like it's one of those things I didn't think about until like you see the Waynes coming out of the theater. And then I looked at the marquee and it just said blowout. And then underneath it said Zorro the Gay Blade. And I was like, this mother effer, like if he pulls this off without like without any of us knowing that this was going to happen. So the Waynes go down an alley. A guy follows
while
him.
He's talking to he's in Arkham Asylum
right,
and all
right.
white, no makeup. But this is also a different question, too. I just wanted to bring up is that he's talking to this social worker that looks just like his social worker he's talking to in the beginning.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I mean,
it's a very similar setup. He's sitting across from this person that looks similar, dressed similar, and so it makes you start to question
if everything we've seen has been
how much of this fantasy in his origin story is he making up? He could still be crazy in Arkham Asylum.
Could be
imagining this. So I do think that is a valid
because
question.
They even say in the beginning of the movie that he was committed, like he was in a hospital.
So you
There's
wonder
a reason.
Is this his fantasy inside
I could see
the asylum, and now he's built this origin for him, and now he became Joker, but through his fantasies.
I could see that. It's an interesting choice.
So just something to think about.
Yeah. So then
he starts laughing and he says, "Just thinking of a joke, you wouldn't get it.
You wouldn't get
it." And we see
the Waynes are both shot. And Bruce is left standing there, and then it kind of fades back to a hallway with the Joker walking out, and his feet are covered in blood.
Yeah.
And then it's another kind of funny scene, and not
Scooby-Doo chase.
Yeah, the Scooby-Doo chase where he's running back and forth, and the orderly's chasing him, and that's kind of how
it
ends.
You know, the Joker that just murdered someone with bloody footprints, and now he's running around like Scooby-Doo. Like that's a Joker thing,
right?
Yeah,
that's
right.
His chaos, his sick sense of humor, and so I liked that a lot, and I wonder how that's the point where I started questioning, geez, how much of this movie is real? I want to watch it again.
Right.
See if there's any more clues, but I think that you can bring up a lot of things.
So here's this is my theory. If they decide they want to use Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker from here on out, what you can say is we already know that there's been a Joker movement.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the Jared Leto Joker was just a guy who followed suit.
Yeah.
And he's not the real Joker.
I don't want to connect it to this universe.
The Dread
but
Pirate Roberts of Jokers.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, I could
but
see that.
But this does set up for multiple Jokers, movements.
Yeah,
yeah, I
right.
agree.
So I think that if they want to use him.
I don't think that'll happen because I don't think Joaquin Phoenix wants to.
That's the thing.
If they're going to make a Batman movie, they're going to make a gritty art house Batman movie and then he'll be the Joker.
Right.
But for him to be in Justice League 6,
right.
Like
no. I think we're getting a whole reboot. I honestly don't know how that's going to work with Wonder Woman or Aquaman.
It's going to need to be a very. He's not going to want to be in that world.
No, probably
he's
not.
This is not. I would be surprised. I mean, there was a time when I would have said the same thing about Johnny Depp.
Sure,
but he just doesn't. That doesn't seem to interest him. He doesn't seem to want or need the money.
Not with his trajectory. It's just not what he's doing.
I just don't think. I think if they make another one of these in this vein in this world. He might agree to do it,
right?
But to say, "Hey, we want you to do a big giant action movie," and you're the I think it would undermine this story.
I think it could.
I think can't have it this grounded in reality, but then turn around because also keep in mind if it's just a Batman world, Batman doesn't have superpowers.
Nope.
Like this, so far this Joker does not exist in a world. Where there is
Superman.
Where there's a Superman, there's no fantastical element. They don't have aliens, they don't have superpowers, nobody's shooting lasers out of their eyes, like nobody flies. It's all just grounded.
Right.
Now, this is also set in the early 80s. I mean, their Superman could have not landed yet, right?
Yeah, theoretically. Or their Superman is still a boy in Smallville, yeah, because Superman and Batman are always roughly the same age.
Right.
And
yeah,
so that could be as well. But I'm just saying, nothing about this movie feels like they live in a world where people are going to have superpowers.
Yeah.
Just tonally.
Well, and they put it on Front Street. I mean, just so to be clear, Todd Phillips has come out. He came out to say it's a standalone. He and Joaquin Phoenix have both said, I don't see it connecting or going into any others. Like, they've been asking him, Todd Phillips, the director and writer, says, I do not see it going into a shared universe or continuing.
I would agree with that if you don't set up Batman.
That's not a shared universe. Yeah. You can't have a Joker without a Batman.
But we do have a Joker without a Batman. Like, what? This whole movie sets up. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like,
the
Joker
Batman
exists in relation to Batman.
But the Joker at this point already exists. In this world.
I'm saying meta. Like,
remove
it from the film. The Joker as a character doesn't exist without Batman.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, and so, it's like...
I thought you meant, like, we don't get the Joker in this world without getting Batman.
Right, if you made a Dr. No movie... It's still, there's no Dr. No without James Bond.
Sure, sure, sure.
You know what I'm saying? And so, like, so I don't look at, just because we get a glimpse of Batman and Batman's origin, I still don't see that as necessarily a shared universe. I see that as like, well, of course there's a Batman in a world where there's a Joker.
Sure.
Like, if they had a nod to Clark Kent, I would be like, what's that mean? That's a different thing.
Right.
But to me, they're part of the same universe within that universe.
To answer your question, Kevin, Clark Kent, if they do this, Clark Kent does exist already because him and Bruce are the same age. So Clark Kent is in Smallville.
Right.
But
this is what I was just saying.
Yeah, there's no Superman yet.
Right. Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. That the age of the superhero, he is, I know I'm a Superman guy, but he is the starting point for the age of the DC comics. Yeah. Like, when he shows up, then everybody starts showing up.
You can have a Clark Kent. I just mean, Tom was saying no one's flying around in powers.
Correct.
And
saying, right.
There's just not a Superman yet.
Yes.
But I think it was brilliant the way they backed into a Batman origin.
Yeah.
Yes.
They didn't hit you over the head with it. You didn't necessarily see it coming. They teased
and they tricked you. Bored with another origin story.
No.
It was like, this thing's been happening over here the whole time.
Right.
Surprise. I didn't think it was going to connect that.
Yes.
That
I didn't
much.
Either.
And so I dug it.
Yeah,
and
I did too.
We've already seen the Joker directly create Batman, and I love how he did it, but indirectly. It was
right.
His movement.
This is a little homage to 89's Batman.
But it's like, but one of his Joker followers killed the parents. So Joker did cause it, but not directly.
Right.
And which to me adds an interesting wrinkle to the Batman-Joker relationship.
Yeah.
Right.
Where now Bruce automatically associates the Joker,
the
clown with the man who killed his parents.
Right.
Yeah. And it could still be Joe Chill. That's the thing. It could be Joe Chill under that mask.
And from a young Bruce Wayne standpoint, seeing something like that when you're 9, 10 years old, like he might just assume it was really our Joker, Arthur Fleck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, your mind can play tricks on you.
But it may as well have been.
But he didn't do it, like you said, directly.
Right.
But in his mind, it makes no difference. He started this movement and everything, and he caused it. And so I think that's really cool. And they've connected it even more than normal because Batman is usually traumatized and he has this connection with Joker, and obviously losing your parents is bad enough, but now it's not just Joe Chill, even if it is, it's Joe Chill the Joker follower.
Right.
So you've given him more reason to hate Joker than ever before.
And honestly, you've given the Joker more reason to hate the Waynes.
Yeah.
And we don't know that.
Yeah, the whole backstory with Thomas Wayne that we've never heard. It's like, wow, they both have a reason to hate each other.
And we don't
other.
Obviously we don't know that if the Joker ever figures out who Batman
is. Typically the Joker does not know that he's Bruce Wayne. But
that adds an interesting wrinkle to that whole thing.
But I dug it. And the further away I get from the movie, the more like I said, initially I was like, I'm not sure. But
I was like, man, I don't like
But the more I got away, the more distance I get from, the more I'm like, man,
I
dug it. Yeah.
It was my number one anticipated movie of the year. I hyped up my head so much that when I left it, I'm like, oh, I expected to love it more, but I haven't stopped thinking about it all week.
Right.
So it's
So it's definitely worth every go. And I don't think you need to see it in IMAX. I don't really see the point in that. No. They were making a big deal out of. I was like, but you
they always do. But yeah, it's a gorgeous movie.
They make the deal out of it because they get $4.
That's true. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, join the League of Show Sharers. Don't forget to check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Real Spoilers. And of course, subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, Kevin, Spotify, wherever. So anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Grimm can't find the BQE.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? Ah, ah. My dad said be an actor, my son. But be a comical one. They'll be standing in lines for those old honky-tonk monkey shines. Now you could study Shakespeare and be quite elite. And you could charm the critics and have nothing to eat. Just slip on a banana peel, the world.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.